Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Charles, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
This is Andrew Unterberger. I'm a senior editor at Billboard.com.
All right, talking another new number one this week on the Hot 100 after so many weeks, a record-setting run for Old Town Road at number one. It's now 2 weeks in a row of new number ones, so we'll talk about this week's coming up, plus a couple high-profile debuts on the Hot 100 as well. And then after that, we're talking all Taylor Swift for the rest of the podcast, including what should the next singles be from the new album Lover. We did this last time when Reputation came out. Trevor, we tried to pick what the next singles should be, and I think we really, really failed. I don't think either of us thought Delicate should have been a single. Turned out to be sort of the biggest radio hit and maybe at this point the best received song a couple years later. So maybe we can be a little bit better this time. Andrew, maybe so maybe you being
the,
here will help.
That's the task for this time around is what's going to be this album's Delicate.
If you want to put it in those terms.
Well, it was a tough one. I don't think a lot of people saw Delicate coming at first. You know, it's buried on the album a little bit. It's not really like an immediate banger. It was a slow burner. I think even Delicate itself probably didn't look like it was going to be Delicate until a couple months into its run there.
All right, so that's all coming up. Let's start with this week's Top 10 on the Hot 100 with another new number one.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
I can't write one song that's not about you. Can't drink without thinking about you. Is it too late to tell you that everything means nothing if I can't have you? I can't write one song that's not about you.
Number 9.
I want you out of my head. I want you out of my bedroom tonight. There's no way I can save you, 'cause I need to be safe too. I'm no good at goodbyes. We're both acting insane, but you're stubborn.
Number 8.
'Cause I don't care when I'm with my baby, yeah. All the bad things disappear. You're making me feel that maybe I am somebody. I can deal with the bad nights when I'm with my baby, yeah.
Number 7.
Ain't never got you knowing being modest. Popping, shipping only 'cause you know you popping, yeah. You got it, girl, you got it. You got it, girl, you got it.
Number 6.
Can we just talk? Can we just talk about where we're going? Before we get lost, let me out first. Can't get what we going on. I've never felt like this before.
Number 5.
I got red, I got blue, what you want? The Chanel, the Balenciaga, Louis Vuitton. She know I got the Fanny Prada when I am alone. From the bottom, you can see the way.
Number 4.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till
I can't no more.
I got the horses in the
back. Number 3.
Fresh photos with the bomb lighting. New man on the Minnesota Vikings. True hearts needed something more exciting. Bum bum be dum be dum bum.
Number 2.
I'm that bad type. Make your mama sad type. Make your girlfriend mad type. Might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy.
Duh. And number 1.
Yeah, I love it when you call me senorita. I wish I could pretend I didn't need ya. But every touch is ooh la la la. It's true la la la. Ooh, I should be running. Ooh, you know I love it when you call
me. Okay, to number 1 to bring us out of that countdown. That is the song Senorita by Shawn Mendes and Camila Cabello. So, what's the Shawn fan? Do they have a name? The Mendes Army, the men and women.
Shawnoritas.
I'm gonna Google it while you're talking. Yeah.
Okay, well, Shawn Mendes fans out there, but yeah, Shawn Mendes first number one on the Hot 100 after coming oh so close twice earlier this year. If I Can't Have You debuted at number 2 a few months back, and Senorita actually started at number 2 as well. So, never as heartbreaking as when you are that close to number 2, but finally he's at number 1. Camila Cabello back at number 1 for the first time since Havana in the early part of 2018. So, I guess this kind of also, now that Shawn has a number 1, it kind of opens this question that I remember when Leonardo DiCaprio like won his Oscar. I remember I asked a lot of people, like, okay, so, like, now that Leo's finally, like, crossed off the bucket list, who's next up for an Oscar? So in that same vein with Shawn Mendes, people have been waiting for Shawn. He'd had multiple top tens. It felt like he could, was getting closer and closer and closer. Now that he's finally there, and we've seen, in recent months, Ariana Grande get her first number 1. Taylor had to wait a while before she got hers. I mean, Justin Bieber, same case. Drake had a couple Rihanna features, but people really were like, when's he going to get his own?
Ed Sheeran a couple years ago.
Yeah, Sheeran in that same camp. Who out there is next in line, it feels like, in the pop canon? Who deserves that next number 1?
Oh, this was a sort of spin on a question that we asked in our five burning questions chart column today. The way I phrased it was more like, who's the biggest star right now without one? And maybe they're not necessarily on schedule to have a new album or new song out in the immediate future. So maybe they won't be crossing their own names off that list anytime soon. But I think the biggest stars that we're still waiting on, and the names most frequently mentioned, were Nicki Minaj, who's sort of like the grandfather,
sort of a poster child at this point for it. Yeah,
been a solid decade of coming close, but never quite. And then a much newer artist in Khalid, who's only been charting singles for about 2 years now, but has gotten to number 3 twice, once on his own, once with Logic and Alessia Cara, and has just kind of blanketed the Hot 100 in the last 24 months. I think he has 25 Hot 100 hits total, so you have to think that he'd be in the mix for one eventually too.
But Khalid doesn't feel like, because I guess what we saw with Drake and with Bieber and Taylor, like it was a couple album cycles. People don't think that Khalid's too new to sort of start getting into the deserve talk or the should.
When you had as many hits and just the sheer wide variety of them that Khalid's had with so many different collaborators, Marshmello and Kane Brown and Logic and all these other people, you just kind of feel like almost by blind luck he'd hit a number 1 eventually. And he came pretty close on his own recently with Talk, which was obviously like an enormous, enormous radio hit and a pretty big Hot 100 hit too, getting a number 3. So you'd have to think that, maybe not necessarily, maybe it'll take another album or two, maybe it won't be on his own, maybe it'll be as a feature, maybe it'll be a Halsey collaboration, who knows. But you have to think that he'll contend for one pretty soon, if not actually get there himself. And then the third one, who's in sort of a weird place career-wise at the moment, is Selena Gomez, who has never really gotten that close for someone as popular as she is and for someone who's been as popular as long as she is. She had that string of singles in 2017 or 2018, Bad Liar, Fetish, Wolves, Back to You. They all kind of peaked around number 20, almost all in that 15 to 25 range. So she's not getting closer necessarily, but she still is that kind of huge name, that sort of that household name, thanks largely in part to her acting and music both. whenever she releases her new album, which has been, I don't know, rumored and promised for however long now and hasn't, we still haven't actually seen any hard evidence of it, but supposedly it's coming. When that happens, you have to think that the first single will certainly be one of the most buzzed about singles of the year. There'll be a huge streaming push for it, a huge fan push for it, and maybe she can finally get in the mix for that number one. But those are the artists that I think are probably the closest in discussion of taking over for Shawn Mendes as that biggest artist with that number one hit right now.
If you mention Selena, do you put Demi Lovato in that or not the same way?
Maybe. I don't think that Demi Lovato has – I don't think her name kind of rings out quite the same way as Selena Gomez does. Like, I'm sure – like, I don't know, my mother probably knows who Selena Gomez is. Maybe she knows who Demi Lovato is, maybe not. I don't know. And
Andrew's mother on the phone.
I'm just saying. I know she's a very, very worldly woman, my mother. It's very impossible that she knows both of them by now. But Demi, I don't think has quite had that kind of celebrity outside of the music the way that Selena Gomez has. And she also, I don't know, not necessarily trending in the exact right direction there. Although, sorry, not sorry, it was only a couple years ago at this point. That was a pretty big hit.
That was her highest peaking. For the record, number six.
Number six, all right. Well,
also, Selena will say, good for you, same old love, both number fives.
Okay, well, there you go. So that's a pretty thin distinction between the two of them. So yeah, if you want to throw Demi in there, that's fine too.
Sam Smith, who's sure on to number two. So yeah. Especially the resurgence he's kind
of had. He looked like he was kind of fading out of the mix after,
Too Good of Goodbyes, kind of, that was like the last...
He's reinvented himself a little bit more, you know, doing more upbeat kind of dance pop stuff, and that seems to be a good sound for him. And I'll also throw in, I guess, if we're just talking about names and just kind of like whose name rings out, we'll talk about Harry Styles, who, he's had a number four hit, Sign of the Times, not a huge radio hit, not a huge hit in terms of endurance, but obviously a tremendous debut and a song that a lot of people really liked, and that was one of our favorites here at Billboard that year. When he comes back, certainly if he has another song that fits in maybe a little bit better with radio, maybe a little bit better with, kind of trends in 2019 pop music. Doesn't seem to be the direction he's going anyway. If you read the story, it sounds like he's getting pretty much into classic rock and kind of going further down that rabbit hole. But anytime he does come out with a song that kind of connects like that, he has the name, he has the audience, he has the cult of fans and the one deers, directioners. So... He'll always be in contention. He just needs the right song to do it with.
Well, here's one we have to mention. And partly I was thinking One Direction because they got to number two. If they ever get back together, possibility, sure. Depending if it's the right song. Jonas Brothers can get back together.
Five Seconds of Summer, too, if they have another Youngblood.
If we're going to mention those groups, got to mention BTS.
Of course.
Yeah.
Getting closer each time, it seems like.
I definitely want to throw out a mention as well. And it's kind of different vein, different genre, different kind of artist. But I think J. Cole... in the past couple of years has gotten, more and more. I know it's not a big radio artist per se, not the most sort of quote unquote commercial artist, but in terms of just importance, I think, to hip hop, and especially seeing Kendrick cross his name off that list with the Taylor Swift feature. But, I guess history will record Humble as Kendrick's quote unquote first number one. But to see him cross that milestone, and Cole's gotten very much closer. I mean, Middle Child was in the top 10 for a lot of weeks. His albums continually stream very, very well. So it feels like kind of in that same vein, maybe that lead single from the next project, could be the one to put him over the top. But it seems like he's getting closer and closer. And maybe some of these other like hip hop artists who, now the streaming is such a monster, such a force, they can really play that to their advantage and start out big.
Yeah, I think Middle Child was his biggest hit yet, right? It was number four, I think.
Yeah, in terms of peak position, yeah.
There you go. And by the way, going back to our earlier conversation, the Shawn Mendes fan base name, very creative. The Mendes Army.
I said that. I threw that out. That's wild. Okay, that was a guess, so I don't know.
At least according to the Wikipedia, very official Wikipedia page of list of fandom nicknames. So, okay.
Can you edit that to put in Shawnuritas? Also, I feel like with Señorita going to number one, I feel like Camila did something that was pretty difficult in that she made a second hit that sounds similar in some ways to Havana in terms of the Spanish, the inflections to the song. And it just feels like Havana was just always going to be maybe a career song for her. And it would be hard to top that and also try to either top it or match it with a song that – is in some ways pretty similar because then you run the risk of it just being a copycat. But I feel like both of these songs really stand on their own as just both great songs. And yeah, there just happen to be similarities between them.
Yeah, and the real question to me is, do you think Ed Sheeran's smarting and getting beaten to the spot with his own South of the Border, which maybe isn't quite taking off the same way as Señorita did? And, there's a very similar song with Camila Cabello and this is sort of the same sort of Spanish inflections and It just seems like a little too late for that song and its commercial chances. And I think Senior is a better song anyway.
Couple other debuts on the Hot 100 this week. Normani, speaking of former Fifth Harmony members, baby.
Damn, he had to make the connection. He couldn't not make the connection.
Motivation debuts at number 33 by Normani. The most interesting thing to me is if you look into the writing credits, Ariana Grande co-wrote it. Yeah. And it's her first Hot 100 hit that she's written for someone else. She's co-written 32 of her 49 Hot 100 hits. So you might not even realize she's been a writer on so many of her songs. But
it makes the lyric in Seven Rings stand out that much more. When she says she writes her own checks, like she writes what she sings.
Yeah.
Because when I first heard that, I was like, but you don't. But you do. Okay, but you do.
Yeah. So kind of like how Ed Sheeran started writing for other people. Seems like another, a little more hidden moment in the big year that Ariana Grande's been having for the last year or so. Now she's getting writing credits for other artists.
And along those lines, a shout out to the second number one single for Charlie XCX as well as one of the writers on Senorita. You know, one of the 20 writers on that song. That song was definitely workshopped. And we actually
Only eight.
All right. But our own Taylor Weatherby did a really nice article, I think, earlier this month, talking to six or seven of those eight writers and kind of piecing together how the songs came together. And it was a really interesting process. And who knows exactly how much involvement Charlie had on that compared to some of the others. But she certainly played a role. And that's a huge win for her, where she kind of continues to keep one foot in the pop world, even as she's sort of changing things from the underground, in her day-to-day recording life, collaborating with really interesting people and doing really kind of left field pop stuff. But she's also still very much a presence in the top 40 world. And so it's a big one for her, too.
Normani opened for Ariana earlier this year on her tour. Also, Social House was one of the opening acts. So the fact that they're able to collaborate all together shows that, it's kind of nice that they're not only working together as tour mates, but also creatively working together during that process. It's not just a money grab or, somebody's label trying to pluck somebody together. But the fact that, they're on the road doing all these things, but also finding some time to make new music is, I think, really cool and probably something that just goes to show how genuine a lot of these friendships and relationships are. In a time when, of course, a lot of people think that they're just, it's just all about the money, all about getting your clout and your access. Like, no, this seems really genuine. So I like that.
Song debuts, or at least one other, even higher that we'll mention in a moment, but Slide Away by Miley Cyrus debuts at number 47 on the Hot 100. Getting really good reviews, feels like this is already some sort of a pretty big favorite in her catalog, at least in recent years.
Let's slow the roll on that one for now, I would say. I mean, it's a good song. It was a good performance last night, very solid, very stately. I don't know. Is it a game changer for Miley Cyrus? We'll see. It's not her, if people are billing it as her thank you next, it's not that. It's good.
So we're saying overall, Billy Ray is still having the best year among all the Cyruses.
Oh, he's certainly living life the most. And he was having fun taking his victory lap on the VMA stage last night. I think that was a long time coming for Mr. Cyrus.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
All right, talking VMAs, talking Taylor Swift. Also debuting on the Hot 100, number 19, the title cut from Lover for Taylor, number one on the sales chart, top 25 on the streaming chart. I'm going to start with this. There's so many things we can talk about. So in 2019, the average length of hit songs on the Hot 100, it's 307. So the average top 10 length for a hit song on the Hot 100 in the top 10 was 3 minutes and 7 seconds. And that's down from last year when it was 337. So just last year to this year, songs are down to exactly 30 seconds. That's from research by Hit Songs Deconstructed. So I was looking at the track list for the Taylor album. It's 18 songs, which is her longest album yet. By number of songs, so she's not oblivious to how streaming nowadays. If you have more tracks, you get more streams. So she's clearly looking at that. But also the length of songs, there are 5 songs on this album under 3 minutes each. And I went back and looked through all her other albums. She only has 2 other songs in her entire catalog that are under 3 minutes. They're both on her first album. And one of them is the pop version of Teardrops on My Guitar. So really, almost her entire career, other than Picture to Burn, she's had songs over 3 minutes. Some, Speak Now, had a couple over 6 minutes each. So yeah, well, on this album, she's right in line with what other pop acts are doing. So she's, if nothing else, just to start with, being very smart about where the business is.
Do you think anything is subconscious with Taylor Swift?
Well, that's the big question, right? I mean, I don't know, because there goes the calculating word again that, you know, I feel like
it doesn't even have to be calculating. I think it's just smart. And the other interesting thing is you talk about Speak Now. So I was looking into it. I was looking at trying to figure out if this was her longest album to date yet, because obviously it's 18 tracks. She's never had an album that long in terms of track number before. Speak Now is 13 tracks long, and it's 7 minutes longer than this album.
Yeah.
And that album's an anomaly in her catalog for a number of reasons. But it really is stark to go through an 18 track album, and you know it's still relatively compact by kind of modern standards, and has the shortest song of her career so far, and It's Nice to Have a Friend, which was one of my favorite songs on the album, none of those kind of singer songwritery like epics that she did, you know, a bunch on Speak Now, and she had All Too Well on Red, which I think is also like 5+ minutes long, and she sort of cut those out of her catalog now, and now it's all very kind of tight to the point. Modern pop songs, and I think they still feel like Taylor Swift songs. Like I don't think that like you wouldn't mix any of these songs up with like, you know, Gucci Gang or Old Town Road or Sunflower or these other songs where it's just like, wow, that was a short song. They still feel like, you know, fully bodied Taylor Swift songs. But yeah, she's not immune to trends in the marketplace. She knows what she's doing. So does Jack Antonoff and the other people that she's working with. And she is working with some of the people behind some of those songs now. She's working with Louis Bell. She's working with Frank Dukes, like the dudes that are kind of shaping the sound of top 40 as we know it now. And you know, she knows what it takes to stay vital in the marketplace. And it's shorter songs and longer track lists. And that's not surprising, but it's still interesting.
To that point about who her collaborators are, you'll sift through the credits. You will not see Max Martin this time around. So Max, you know, had been with her basically all through 1989 Reputation. Also, you know, a big helping hand on I Knew You Were Trouble. So really, you know, Taylor's pop makeover in a lot of ways with a lot of those collaborations with Max and Shellback. Is that telling in some way that Max is he? I don't know. Is he on the cusp out again? He's had ebbs and flows in his career.
Well, he actually co-wrote the new Normani song as well. He's written songs for Ariana most recently. So he's still certainly, at least if you go by Ariana, he's still having hits.
Yeah. But I guess in the fact that, you know, if you want to talk about, I guess if we're talking about sort of conscious choices, I mean, that for another Taylor Swift pop album, for them not to work together, that seems like a fairly incredibly conscious choice. And I mean, I wonder, you know, what does that suggest? Is that to suggest Reputation she knows wasn't received as well as she liked it, would have liked for it to be, and maybe they do need to go with the new crop of producers and songwriters who are making hits or what?
I prefer to think of it as just Taylor graduating from the school of Max Martin. He says, you know, I have nothing more to teach you, Taylor. You can go off into the world. you've learned all the lessons that I have to impart, and now you must make it on your own. But obviously, it's like she. You know, Max Martin, you know, helped her realize her kind of pop potential, but it was always there to begin with. Like, and you can kind of hear it on this album. I don't, you know, when you say that Max Martin's on the album, that was the first time I'd even thought about that. because it does still feel very much in line and of a piece sonically with 1989 and Reputation. It feels like the kind of the natural evolution there. So maybe the schedules didn't work out. Maybe Max Martin's charging too much these days. Who knows? But she doesn't really need him to continue to be the pop version of herself, I don't think. And we're sort of seeing that on this album.
Charging too much for Taylor?
It's possible. Look, man, everybody's got a budget these days. Yeah. Times are tight.
Taylor's always been the architect of her own sound. I still wonder, you know, I remember the days when she worked with Liz Rose and Nathan Chapman for so many of her songs. Yep. And then she kind of, moved on to that. I mean, she wrote, to your point about Speak Now, you know, one of the big anomalies, she wrote that whole album by herself. So to sort of move on from that country sphere and take the lesson she learned, and she could shape her own destiny, and then kind of doing the same thing in the pop sphere. And Taylor Swift's always been the architect of Taylor Swift. That's a good point.
It's ESPN philosophy. They never want the talent to be bigger than the channel. So it's the same sort of thing with Taylor. Like, she'll work with these collaborators, and she'll get what she needs from them, and she'll help them on their paths as well. But they're not part of the brand. The brand is Taylor Swift. So we have. I think Trevor's right. I think that probably is sort of a conscious thing that it's okay. Well, we've done two or three albums together. Now it's time to move on. You know, we'll say our goodbyes, and maybe we'll meet up down the line. But new adventures onwards and upwards.
Yeah, I think historically too. You look at people who in the '80s, a lot of people, bands that maybe were known as rock bands, had pop hits written with other people, and it kind of seems like there is that element that you want to prove that after you work with the hit songwriters that you didn't actually need it. That wasn't the main reason that you became bigger than you might have been before.
Even Michael and Quincy had to break up at some point.
Yeah. All right, so we did this last time when Reputation came out. We tried to pick what the singles should be after Look What You Made Me Do and Ready For It. And it kind of – as much as we're going to beat ourselves down for not doing that well, it kind of seems like, as we were saying about Delicate, that it probably even was a surprise to everyone that – otherwise Delicate would have been maybe the first single if that was going to be the biggest or most long-lasting radio hit. So I guess we'll sort of get into this as we talk about what the next single should be. But listening to the album as a whole now, was it a mistake to put out Me and You Need to Calm Down as the first two singles?
Yeah, it was a strange choice. I think if she had done You Need to Calm Down first, I think that actually probably would have been better received. I think people were kind of soured by Me to a certain extent, and then You Need to Calm Down wasn't a home run, but
it's still going at radio, and it looks like it's going to have a longer radio run than Me did.
It feels a little bit more contemporary, and it feels a little bit more like Taylor Swift herself. And the video was interesting and fun. And there's still some clunker lyrics in there. There's still some times in the video and in the song itself where she kind of steps over the line as an ally, maybe makes people a little bit uncomfortable. But it feels like a radio hit. It feels like a banger. It feels like a song that can kind of play on the 2019 level and not sound either behind the times or too precious or too Taylor-y in general. Like it feels like a hit. So, and it felt like a hit last night. I thought it sounded great opening the show. I thought it's held up pretty well. And I think a lot of people, and that's a song that in the context of this album, I think makes more sense, even though it's also sort of buried towards the end. But yeah, when you look back at those two songs, putting them out one after the other, it seems like they kind of only hurt each other.
I mean, I guess with Me, I feel like whether or not it's a good choice, I guess I sort of, it follows the pattern that I think has sort of been established. I think even going back to 1989, I think, when Shake It Off came out, I mean, that was sort of the theme of that album. Of course, it's her big pop coming out, probably, I mean, the most poppy song that she's ever put out to date. And, I think for some people, you thought 1989 was going to kind of follow in that mold of sort of big and brash and bold. And, it's scaled it down. I mean, it was still obviously a very upbeat album for the most part, Fun, Blank Space and Bad Blood and all those kind of things. But I think Shake It Off sort of sets expectation, and she could sort of play with that and maneuver it a little bit to something that was, generally still very agreeable, but not a wholly like, wow, when Taylor Swift went pop, she went all the way to the wall. And I think Reputation followed that same mold. I mean, Look What You Made Me Do. When people heard that, people, I think, instantly had impressions of what they thought this was going to be. This is going to be a very bitter, very dark album. She's going to try these new vocal cadences that she'd never really done before. And people sort of mocked her for that pseudo accent she was using. And then Reputation came out. It was, it was scaled back in that same way. It wasn't nearly as, you know, piping, you know, her screaming against the world kind of, you know, wasn't as dramatic as, oh, the old Taylor's dead. Like, that's as far as we got.
Yeah, but going along those lines, then wouldn't You Need to Calm Down have made sense for the single for this album, where this is, like, activist Taylor and, like, you know, that's sort of the narrative that we have of her going into this album. And so she puts out this song that expresses allyship for LGBTQ, you know, her friends and community. And then you listen to the album, and it's okay. It's not really that political an album, but...
Well, I think you know, to her smarts or strategy, I think that probably opens a different can of worms. If you want to, you know, I mean, it's one thing to talk about, you know, yourself and look what you made me do, I guess, or people have wronged you. But I guess, I don't know, wouldn't it feel like a bait and switch to some people if her first single was going to be sort of allyship and she's new political Taylor, then she's like, actually, I'm not going to be that. And I mean,
right,
to her very much point, she's very conscious of that, giving the interviews that, you know, why she didn't come out to... you know, support Hillary Clinton or blast Donald Trump because she knew that she could be sort of weaponized or whatnot, used to, her endorsement to or from. So I feel like, I don't know, I mean, with me being sort of like the most bold, sort of, you know, friendly, energetic sort of song on the album, that you're right. I think it is like an outlier for the rest of the album, but I guess in that same mold, it's sort of now we're back again. Everybody, we're happy. I mean, you see the video, everything's changing. Sticks and stones, don't break my bones. We emerge from the dark place. And, you know, from that, we can sort of settle back down to earth gently and go back into, you know, regular Taylor Swift mode.
Yeah. The real problem is that, I mean, even though I think it's a good point that it might have been an uncomfortable statement to make as her first statement coming back, especially if she wasn't going to go through with it for the rest of Lover. But at least there's a statement made with You Need to Calm Down. The problem with me is that there was no statement. It almost felt like an anti-statement, like she was kind of clearing the decks with this song. But
I think coming after the last album, there was heavier in some ways. It was just, here's a happy, frivolous song.
I guess so. And maybe doing the happy, frivolous song did kind of, you know, clear the runway for her to come back with You Need to Calm Down, which I'm sure is a song that she's more personally invested in. So maybe she just kind of needed that palate cleanser first, and maybe that's what Me was, but...
Almost more like a promo single
than
be her first sort of radio.
Yeah. So maybe that's how she should have played it. Maybe she just shouldn't have done such a big lead up to it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe just kind of dropped it unexpectedly. But that's not the Taylor Swift way.
All right, so if we work for Republic Records, we have to pick the next single. These two are already out there. So next single after You Need to Calm Down runs its course at radio. I'll go first. I feel like to really change things up, and because there's the... just seems to be so much buzz for it at the moment. The video just came out, but also I just think it's a different sound, and ultimately it's a really good song and sounds a little bit like old Taylor, and is just, I think it would be a nice turn
waiting,
for radio.
Waiting for you to say London Boy at this point.
Nope, I'm going to say Lover, the title cut.
I think it has to be Lover.
Right.
I mean, went off really well at the VMAs last night. It's the top streaming song on the album on Spotify. It had a pretty good debut on the Hot 100 this week. It seems like... It seems like this is going to be a legitimate hit, regardless, almost, if it has the official promotional push or not. But it'll get it. It's already got the video. I think the video is pretty good. I wonder almost if this is her looking at her buddy Ed Sheeran and saying, why don't I have a wedding song yet?
Yeah, the waltzy.
It's very perfecty. I wonder.
Speak Now isn't that's a
song literally about a wedding, but it's not a song that anyone's going to get married to. It's not going to be anybody's first dance. This song, I mean, this almost sounds written for that specific purpose. And it's a really successful song. And it already got like the. You know, like the power ballad sing along treatment last night, and it's only been out for a week, not an official single or 2 weeks, whatever. I think the song has a really, really high commercial ceiling. I think it's a slam dunk choice for the third single.
Yeah, I mean, this one kind of tips your hand with the fact that the video's out. And she's performing it everywhere, which is not something that she's done with like The Archer, for example. So, I mean, I put this down as kind of the obvious pick because there's a lot of warning signs there. Especially I think that the composition of it, I know a lot of blogs and some writers have called it country to some degree, some sort of indie. I mean, it's out there. There's a wish out there,
certainly. Like, in just in terms of, it's not like based around synths and very obvious Max Martin, right, Jack Antonoff type production. It feels like, you know, she can just play the song on guitar if she wants to.
100%. And I think for fans who may, you know, want her to kind of go back down that traditional road. And to the point about, the first two singles, you know, I mean, it feels like she probably can't come with a third sort of, you know, big booming single again. I feel like you do need something a little different to show people, you know, the depth of the album and that it's not just, you know, Taylor trying to whatever, recreate 1989 again or something. So I think Lover's a very, very good choice for that. And, it, you know, even better if she does warm back up to that country audience and if there's any chance for that. I mean, we saw even New Year's Day had a bit of a country push like for a minute there. Lover would have much better success there. But, you know, to spread her base again, that would be probably a very smart and successful thing.
Yeah, she wrote the song herself too, which is worth noting in an era of some
entirely herself.
Entirely herself. I like the lyrics too. I like that element of when you come to that realization that I'm the grown up now. I can make the rules. That's that moment when you kind of feel like you're still waiting for whether it's parents or teachers to tell you what to do. That moment in your 20s or 30s when it's I make the decisions.
I think this not only is it going to be one of the biggest songs of this album, but I think this is going to be a song that she, you know, plays in on tour when she's touring 15 years from now. She's still going to play the song.
I'm so sick of running as fast as I can. Wondering if I'd get there quicker if I was a man. And I'm so sick of them coming at me again. Cause if I was a man, then I'd be the man. I'd be the man.
So my pick for fourth single, it goes back to the big, over-the-top, big, total big pop, catchy chorus. But I feel like you have to go with The Man as the fourth single. Mm. It's back to being up-tempo. And I feel like the lyrics, again, it's kind of similar to You Need to Calm Down, and that she's making a statement, but I feel like it really works, and ultimately the song is just really catchy. And what I'm noticing too, I'll just mention this, The Man, You Need to Calm Down, and Me, they're all collaborations between Taylor and Joel Little. So I know we've mentioned Jack Antonoff co-wrote so much of this album, but I kind of find myself gravitating to the Joel Little songs, and people may not know he also co-wrote Royals and Team with Lord, so he's got a hit.
Didn't they win Song of the Year at the Grammys?
Yeah, and The Man's it'll be an interesting choice. It'd definitely be, you know, going back to the You Need to Calm Down kind of I don't want to say activism, but at least you know, kind of on social points of you know, Taylor talking about how she feels disrespected sometimes inherently as a woman, where she steps into a room and, you know, maybe she's not taken as seriously as she would be if she were male, and she feels like men get away with a lot that she couldn't get away with, and just, you know, she certainly knows the story there better than anybody.
So Andrew, that's not your fourth single.
So at this point, I'm torn between two. I think I'm probably actually not going to end up going with my pick for the most obvious single off this album, because I just think the timing's wrong. I'll say I think He Knows Here, which is, I think, like the zippiest pop song on the album. It's another one of the Jack Antonoff ones. That's the one where I was just listening to it on the you know, the ride into work on a Friday morning. I was just like, this song's a winner. Like, why would this not be one of the first two singles off this album? And I don't know, maybe it's too late to do it as a fourth single, but that's one that's just, all right, this song just works.
And it's
I like Cool Summer. I think, I mean, maybe partially because maybe the timing would be a little, because it'd be the end of the summer when it came out. But maybe people would look back on, you know, the bad summer that they had.
It'd be even later, though, because if we go with Lover next, this is maybe so it's a like winter. It's a winter song.
Okay, so we'll look back at a terrible year. Obviously, this was one of the most anticipated ones just because it was covering with St. Vincent. So I know a lot of people were interested to see, you know, what that collaboration would sound like. And, you know, it's funny because people always... Like, I remember when Imogen Heap was writing with Taylor, and people were very, like, unsure, you know, how that could work. And they came up with the song Clean off 1989. And that's one of my favorite songs that she's ever recorded. And I still think it was a single, and I still think it should have made Billboard's list of best deep cuts.
There's a lot of competition from Taylor Swift in that deep cuts list, Trevor.
I understand. I'm just going to air my grievance when I have the opportunity. But, yeah, I mean, obviously Cruel Summer, you know, It's funny because people read a lot into this. Some people think that it's, you know, sort of another one of those Kanye diss tracks, which I don't know if there's anybody. So, I mean, how many Kanye diss track options people have? I don't know why I'm almost like still so obsessed with this. I assume Taylor Swift is kind of over this. But I mean, I just like that. I don't know. I mean, just it has the right sort of middle of the ground vibe that I think is characteristic of this album, and probably it's not nearly sort of whimsical as Delicate or something like that, but I think it adds sort of a layer of subtlety and it's like subtlety but energy that I think Taylor probably could really benefit from in a lane that we've seen some people, I don't know, almost like, not like Halsey-like, but there's some sort of like middle ground that I really appreciate about it.
It's kind of like Delicate in some ways, that it doesn't hit you over the head with total tempo, but it's still really catchy and more of a laid-back kind of groove.
No, yeah. And I think, it's definitely, you can dissect those lyrics for days, and especially, some of the maturity about, even when she's talking about in the bridge, and she says, "And I scream for whatever it's worth, I love you, ain't that the worst thing you ever heard?" And I just feel like it's Taylor sort of coming to reckoning with what her public persona is, and the fact that, she's had the worst year of her life, but she's still able to sort of, through all this turmoil that's going on with her public persona, still find and enjoy herself. I think that's really just one of the most honest songs on this record. And I think it's just probably, a nice change of pace for her.
Yeah, I think the entire conversation around this album is different if this is the first single released from it. Like, it's just a good song.
Yeah.
And, Cruel Summer works better at the beginning of the summer than it does at the end of the summer. Slight knock for me, taking the iconic Bananarama title. It was Bananarama title before it was a Kanye West title. And then that was one of the great pop songs of the 80s. And I don't know. I don't like stealing a title that iconic without at least giving some sort of wink to it, which I don't think she does over the course of the song. But aside from that, it's a great song. It doesn't kind of overstep in any meaningful way, which is sort of rare for a Taylor song. It's very kind of within itself, and would have sounded great on radio, would have sounded great on any number of Spotify playlists. I think this would have been the number one song if she had released it first. And I think now it's too late. I think you can't have a song called Cruel Summer coming out in September, October. It's just
I think maybe next summer.
If
it holds on.
Yeah. Maybe you'll get a remix or something, and then maybe you'll get Second Life and get on radio in time for summer 2019.
So in five burning questions this week, one of the questions was just going back to Sean and Camila for a second. Other potential male-female duets that could just cause a huge, maybe be a huge hit, or at least get that kind of buzz. Kanye Taylor.
It'd certainly make headlines. No question about that.
I mean, what would they even say? It almost feels like it'd have to be some sort of like bad, like 2000s R&B, like character talk or like sort of,
like a same girl type thing.
I mean, something like very almost like kind of like really meta. Like very much like, how could you do this to me? And it's just like, You can't make up a third story for this. This has to really like address you in real life.
And then the thing that makes Kanye versus Taylor so compelling in general is that they have no musical overlap. I mean, I'm sure they like some of the same songs. I'm sure Taylor likes some Kanye songs, probably vice versa.
He likes some Gaga songs.
He does, yes. But in general, their artistic processes couldn't be more different. She's all about controlling the situation and, titrating the perfect pop song, getting everybody in a room, let's figure out how to do this. And he just wants to kind of completely reinvent the form and do things that no one's ever done before and kind of be on this in this pantheon of the 20th and 21st century geniuses, people that were super ahead of their time and, didn't listen to anybody and just kind of followed their own muse. So there's really not a lot of common ground to it. I feel like it would have to be moderated by somebody with a foot in both camps. I don't know who that person is. Is there somebody that's like kind of equally in both of those worlds?
Beyonce is the only one.
Yeah, maybe. Beyonce is the only peace broker that could make a partnership like this happen.
Well, and of course it would be, full circle, right? I mean, if we remember, it was Beyonce's fault in some ways.
Yeah, for making just too good a music video.
Yeah, she made too good a video at the wrong time.
I've been the archer. I've been the prey. Who could ever leave me, darling? But who could stay?
Maybe it's just kind of a cop out because we've known it a little bit longer, but I just keep coming back to how catchy it is. I feel like I might go with The Archer as the fifth single. Mm. Definitely would be a long running adult contemporary hit. All right, fifth single, Andrew, and then Trevor.
Wouldn't be my personal choice, but maybe around the time of election season, it's time for Miss Americana and the Half Blood Prince.
Heartbreak.
Every single time. I almost considered saying Half Blood Prince as a joke, and now I just forget sometimes which one the actual title is. The song I don't think is one of the best on the album, but it's an interesting song. It's got kind of a Lana Del Rey-ish vibe to it, and there's lyrics on it that you could interpret as being political or at least about kind of the state of the country. So maybe for November, maybe it's around the time of the year for that. I don't think it's going to be a radio smash or anything, but not a lot of fifth singles are these days, so maybe that's just kind of how she plays out the string with this album.
All right, I'll just throw up probably one of my favorites. Like, it just caught me the first time I listened to it. Probably the first song that I really was like, okay. Besides Cruel Summer, that I was like, oh, okay, yeah, yeah. I like Paper Rings.
The moon is high, like your friends were the night that we first met. Went home and tried to stalk you on the internet. Now I've read all of the books beside your bed.
It's got a high octane kind of energy that I like. It's probably too simplistic to say that it's like a, but it's got a little like pop punkish, like,
yeah,
kind of like it would be a influence.
It would be a different single for her.
Yeah, and I don't think she's put out a single like that like in her entire career. So, I mean, I like the vocal cadence. I like the play of it. I mean, and even just the imagery and everything. I feel like it would make for a fun video. And if, you know, if this is part of the strategy of, you know, this album for Taylor is a very fun time in her life, a very happy time in her life. You know, with her new boyfriend, I feel like that's kind of one of those fun songs that just, you know, is instantly catchy, very, very, very listenable on radio. And, yeah, I just like the groove of it. I think it could be a standout.
All right. We'll wrap with, it's hard to do this, when an album just comes out to say, is it, where do you rank it among an artist catalog? Mm-hmm. We were talking about this in the podcast earlier this year when, George Straits, hit, Every Little Honky Tonk Bar came out. I said, this is one of his best songs ever, and it's up against 40 years of catalog. Can you really do that? So it's always kind of difficult when you haven't had weeks, months to really process any new music. But where do we rank this among her albums?
So someone asked me this last Friday, and I don't have a great answer for it yet. But I said what I told to him, which was just, you know, it's in the middle somewhere. It's not. I mean, my two favorites of hers are Speak Now and Reputation, actually. So I kind of have a weird Taylor canon compared to most people who I think prefer Red in 1989. So I think it's not as good as those two albums, probably, and it's certainly better than her self-titled album. And I don't know. We'll see where it ranks in between that and, you know, 1989 and Fearless and Red. But it's in the middle. It's got a lot of really great songs. It's got some songs that I could do without. It's paced a little strangely. It does some interesting things for her career. There are other ways in which I wish she'd taken a couple more chances, worked with a couple more interesting new producers. I you know, we're talking about her moving on from the Max Martin experience. I would love it if this was the end of the Jack Antonoff experience, which isn't to say they have some good songs together. They really do. But I don't think that he challenges her the way that I would want her collaborators to. And I think that, you know, there's still a couple songs of his that sound like Bleacher songs, no matter who's singing them. So I would like this to be kind of the end of her, you know, her pop trilogy, I guess you could say, with 1989 Reputation. Maybe move on. You know, she's never going to leave pop behind. She is a pop artist, but move somewhere else, try some new things. And, you know, I think we'll look back on this album as a really, really solid Taylor Swift album, but maybe not an all-time best.
Yeah, I kind of put it somewhere in the middle, too, and I think, like, overall, it is a good album. I feel like Fearless was the album where she just fully came into her own, mm-hmm, as an artist, and then I'd probably put 1989 just for that being a great pop album. Oh. So I think
you always go commercial, Gary.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. It's tough. For a lot of the reasons you mentioned, I mean, partially because it's so quick to digest. I think it, the 18 songs, you know, I like most songs that, or most albums that go probably over 14 tracks, I think, you know, we could scale a couple down, lose them, and we would tighten up the overall ranking and score a bit. Yeah, I mean, I think it does a lot of things very well, and I think in some ways it's probably the most, like, a very quintessential Taylor Swift album. Like, if I had to bottle an album up and say this is generally what Taylor Swift was about, this might actually be the one, just in the sense that
that's interesting.
It very much it hits all the main points. It's got, I mean, some lovely melodies. It's got, I mean, a lot of lyrics about, you know, of course, her relationships, but a lot of, I mean, metaphors that, yes, you can apply to the political sphere, her failed relationships, her beefs with everybody, the song about her mother, you know, I mean, to show how she can, you know, like I said, I mean, paint a very specific picture, and, you know, in a way that it's something that's very personal to her life, but still she finds a way to make it so inviting in some ways and so interesting that I think anybody could relate to it, even if you've never had, you know, your mother, your family, or anybody go through this. There's something very haunting and touching about it that you can appreciate. No, I don't think it does anything, you know, does it sort of outdo in 1989 or something like that? No, and I don't think that was really the goal. I mean, in some ways, I think Taylor, you know, in a post-Reputation kind of world, is just happy to express herself and wants and really isn't trying to be out there and please anybody and, you know, show that she's got this or show that she can do this. And I think part of that also comes with some of the business lessons that she's had to learn, I guess you could say, in some ways. I mean, to her point, this is the first music that she's owned, you know, herself, after all the drama with Scott Borchetta and Scooter Braun and, you know, the ownership of her masters. So I think there's something, for the first time, very much like entirely quintessentially Taylor Swift about this project. So yeah, I mean, I appreciate that, you know, when you take that sort of, not only just the music itself and the message, but you take that total package into account. Yeah, I mean, I like it a lot. Does it have my absolute favorites? Probably not. You know, I feel like 1989 with, I think it was 11 or 12 tracks. I think it was a lot cleaner, a lot, you know, sort of concise to the point and did its job. And maybe because it was more exciting because it was her first like full pop album, maybe that plays into the picture. But I think we'll look back at this as an important album in her career. And especially, you know, what it meant for her as a businesswoman and as a person. So I definitely think for people who thought kind of in the same way we thought Reputation, the people who thought that we heard the first two singles and they were going to be duds and this was going to be, you know, the long-awaited flop that we, you know, we knew she couldn't do it again. I think those Taylor haters have to be very disappointed again that she once again delivered a very solid, strong product.
All right, we'll find out over the next few months how we did, and we'll see if we're as wrong as we were.
I can't wait until I just bat zero on all of these. Like,
I'm already taking the L on this one.
Can we always be this close forever and ever? And take me out and take me home forever and ever. You're my. Oh, you're
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.